when you put in so much energy and effort into something, you want to get the returns. And when you call it quits, you will no longer see those returns, right? And that was the reason why I stayed in marketing for so long, even when I knew that maybe this is not for me.
You're listening to the Career Queens podcast, a show about millennial women that are making moves and mapping out their career journeys one step at a time. I'm your host, Teti Legalege. And on this episode, I'll be speaking to Ziyanda Khumalo about navigating a career change. When I met Ziyanda in London about 5 years ago, she was a banker at HSBC, who had recently left the world of marketing and consumer packaged goods. As a marketer myself, I was really impressed by the fact that Ziyanda had switched to a very different job function and a very different industry. And whether or not you're thinking about changing job function, industry, or both, I'm sure you'll find Ziyanda's story as inspiring as I did. But before we delve deeper into the details of Z's career journey, let's start with what she wanted to grow up to become when she was a little girl.
I think a lot of people will probably have a similar answer in that they wanted to be a whole lot of different things. But one thing I know is that I wanted to travel the world. I didn't know how that would look like, but there was a show that I was quite fond of in primary school called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? And it was a TV game show about geography. So it taught kids about geography. And I found it so fascinating. I wanted to go to all these countries that were spoken about on the show. So there wasn't exactly a specific career that I wanted or a job profile, but I knew I wanted to travel the world. Now, I know you said in the early stages, right? But I think I also just need to link this to my early teen years. So there's a South African magazine called True Love. It's a magazine targeted at Black women. And True Love went on to do a derivative of the magazine called True Love Babe, which was focused on the teen markets. And in True Love Babe, there were these four ladies who wrote in a blog-style format every month on their careers, their lives, and one of them was a flight attendant. And she would write about all these countries that she'll travel to. And that was it for me. I was like, okay, this is the career that I'm going to go for. I'm going to be a flight attendant.
Interesting. That's so interesting. So like from the early ages, you were like, you want to travel the world. Ziyanda has lived in Johannesburg, London, and now more recently, New York. She has traveled to many countries, but she never did end up becoming a flight attendant. In fact, by the time she was ready to apply for university, Ziyanda's decision concerning what she would study was heavily influenced by her parents and community. Looking around her neighborhood as a child and teenager, Ziyanda noticed that the Black people in her neighborhood that were wealthy and lived in the biggest homes were either doctors, lawyers, or businessmen. And as a high academic achiever and the captain of two sports teams, there were high hopes and expectations that Ziyanda would study medicine and become an affluent doctor, especially once she was admitted into a medical program at one of South Africa's top universities.
So, you know, when you grow up in the hood, everyone thinks that a smart kid needs to grow up and study medicine, right? You have to be a doctor. What else can you use your brains for? And that's what everyone wanted for me, my family, my relatives. So I actually did go on to study medicine. I only did my first year. After my first year, I realized it wasn't for me. And I think it's also very important because it's a career that requires passion and it has to be something that you're really into because you're working with people's lives. And I just knew that it wasn't something that I was going to do with passion. So I looked at my choices and I decided I want to change to commerce. That's when I moved onto the commerce field and I studied marketing and business finance. And then that was my undergrad. And then I went to do my 1 year postgrad, which is the honors year in South Africa. And that was in marketing.
Yeah. Did your parents push back then, like when you pivoted, or, you know, was it like given that you were still studying business, which, you know, often leads to lucrative careers, were they like fine with it?
No, they were not even close to being fine with it. They pushed back quite a lot. But what I did while I was applying to the School of Commerce, I also applied for scholarships and bursaries because I thought if I alleviate the financial pressure, then they don't have much in terms of pushing back because they know that they don't have to worry about that. And on my end, I think I also just had to dedicate myself to making sure that once I actually convert and go into commerce, I do well so that they don't question my decisions.
For many people living outside of South Africa, it may feel like apartheid was so long ago. But consider that when Ziyanda was starting her education as a child, there was still a quota system in her preschool. This quota system limited the number of Black learners that shared a class with other races. Her preschool did this by splitting attendance into two halves. The morning session was attended by white students, a handful of colored and Indian students, and a limited number of Black students. For this group, classes ran until 12 p.m., and the rest of the Black children attended after 12 p.m. Ziyanda was part of the second half and still remembers feeling rejected. I think it's important to note things like this in order to point out that apartheid did not end that long ago and its legacy lives on today and still influences economic outcomes of most Black South Africans. It's no wonder then that so many Black South African parents whose children have the privilege to attend university really want them to pursue degrees that will elevate their financial prospects. Coming up, Ziyanda explains how images of Black people succeeding shaped her vision for her future and convinced her to pursue both marketing and finance.
Adverts, the first year of your commerce year is quite general, so everyone does the same thing. Then you only pick your majors in your second year, so second and third year, you have to pick two majors. So the reason why I picked marketing was quite funny because I was, like I said, I was searching for bursaries while I was applying to the School of Commerce. And I met this lady, this white lady who worked, I think it was De Beers at the time. And she told me about this lady from De Beers who they had sponsored and she was in marketing and she had her own car and she was so independent. And that was it for me. I was like, a Black woman, successful. What does she study? Marketing. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. So that was the decision to do marketing. And then my other major was finance. And that was purely because I've been naturally fairly good at maths. I like numbers. And out of all the other options for me, that was the easiest one to go into. It wasn't necessarily because of what I wanted to do later in life because I hadn't decided then. I think I only decided in my second year where I wanted my career to head after I graduated.
Yeah. So at that point, like when you were thinking about where you wanted your career to go, were you thinking of FMCG? Like, because that's the way, I mean, you ended up going into the, you know, consumer packaged goods space or fast moving consumer goods. Was that your ambition at that point in university?
At that point, yes. Until I watched and read The Pursuit of Happiness, the movie starring Will Smith. And there's a scene in the movie, it's my favorite scene in the whole movie, where Will Smith's character bumps into this guy who's getting out of his Ferrari and is going into this building. And he stops this guy and he says, okay, I've got two questions for you. What are you, what do you do and how do you do it? Right. And even later, we'll probably get to it, when I switched careers, that was the one scene that I always remember that kind of guided me into finance. So even when I was studying marketing and finance, I always kept my options open. When I went to apply afterwards, I applied to FMCG companies and I applied to investment banks. And then ultimately, just because of the offer that I got, which was in marketing, I ended up landing in FMCG.
So you worked at British American Tobacco or BAT for a couple of years, and then you left to go work at Snackworks, another FMCG company. So I'm curious, like, what made you decide to go to work for another FMCG company when, you know, presumably you weren't happy in this industry or job function?
The reason why I actually moved to Snackworks. So Snackworks is under a bigger company called Baker's, Baker's Biscuits to be specific. And the reason why I had moved there is because when I was at BAT, I had already decided that I want to change industries. But I thought to myself, what if it's just the company that's making me feel this way? Let me try something else, still in FMCG, see how that works out, and then make a decision, because it's quite a big decision to make. So when I moved to Snackworks, I worked in the innovations and CapEx projects department. And there we were always working on the next big biscuits. I know people sitting at home are thinking there's actually a team who thinks about these things, but yes, we were that team.
You know, Oreos didn't come out of nowhere.
And, you know, and I remember sitting in a sales and strategy meeting and I'm thinking, does the world need another biscuit? And that was the beginning of the end for me. And I think that is when I actually started aggressively looking into switching into the finance industry.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, you know, you moved companies because you were not sure if it was just a company thing or if it was actual role. So, like, you know, how did it feel like at that time? Like, how, you know, was it just like a general dissatisfaction with the work that you were doing? Or was it like you just wanted more? Like, how did it feel like, you know, that feeling of like not feeling like you're in the right place?
Yeah, for me, I looked at it in the sense of a corporate ladder. So what is the person above me doing in terms of their work and the responsibilities and the person above them until we get to the top, right? What does it look like? Because that's the ladder I'm going to be climbing. And when I would look at what my seniors were doing, it wasn't something that intrigued me. And I also felt that the ceiling was low, you know, in terms of the difference in responsibilities as you went up. And that's, I think, for me, was just one of the reasons that I decided to start looking out into something else. Because if you're just building and building towards something that you don't feel like you're going to be satisfied in, it is not worth it. And that's when I decided, okay, let me look into something where I actually want to have a long-term career in.
So then how did you choose, like, how did you determine that maybe finance was it? Was it, you know, remembering that scene in the movie in The Pursuit of Happiness? Or what was it exactly like that made you feel like finance was the industry that you should pivot into?
Exactly. So that was one part, the movie scene that I mentioned earlier. And another instance was just the fact that I studied business finance, which is corporate finance and investments, in university. So I kind of had an idea of how the industry worked from a theory perspective. But another is just like I said, I grew up watching a lot of TV. I watch a lot of movies. Was watching movies or series on the investment banking industry, and I'd see all these bankers. And guess what they did? They traveled the world. And remember, I said that's what I always wanted to do. So they were able to get on flights, close deals, live these lavish lives, speak big. And I don't know what that says about me, but I found it fascinating. I was like, okay, that's something I'd like to do. And that's ultimately, I guess, those three reasons that made me pivot into finance.
Yeah. But then, I mean, I guess one could say that maybe a lot of those things could still be seen in a marketing career, but I guess it would have been like, were there any specific skills or any kind of tasks or like areas that you enjoyed, like even in your marketing role, that might have also pointed towards maybe an interest in finance?
Yeah, it's funny because when I joined banking, I initially wanted to be in the sales and trading side, which is what I guess we see in a lot of movies. And that's where the bankers sell products to investors, right? Whether it's selling shares or FX products or commodities or whatever, they're selling it to investors. So there is an aspect of marketing in it in that sense. right? Mm-hmm. And even though I did not fully understand what actually happens there, I saw the link and I thought, okay, if I move into banking, this is something that I'd want to do, even though that's not where I landed. But because of the familiarity from the marketing side, that's what kind of drew me, not knowing that there is so much more to this world and so many things that you can do and skills that you can pick up. But just because of the information I had at that point, that was the basis.
Yeah. Something else I remember about, you know, having a, like in our conversation in London all those years ago that stuck with me was when you said you'd rather be at the bottom of the right ladder than halfway up the wrong ladder, which I feel is like so powerful. And I definitely think that it applies to more areas than just, you know, being in the right career, you know, you could even say in relationships.
True.
Because, you know, people like often think, you know, I've invested so much in this career or I've invested so much in this relationship. And yeah, I guess like a big life change like that really does take a lot of courage. And a lot of people, like, yeah, like I said, may get hung up just about the time that we already invested. So in your case, like what, you know, like how did you, first of all, how did you even like get prepared mentally to make that move? Because, you know, working, moving from marketing to finance, and I'm saying this as someone who works in marketing, of course I didn't study finance, although I did some courses in finance like during my degree, but like for me, like to make that shift into finance, it just seems like a whole other world. So how did you like even, you know, prepare yourself to the point where you can actually make such a big change and bold move?
I think in my case, it was actually a longer process than it sounds, because it was over 3 years. And it's exactly because of the reason that you stated, the investment part, whether it's investing in a career or relationship. When you've put in so much energy and effort into something, you want to get the returns. And when you call it quits, you will no longer see those returns, right? And that was the reason why I stayed in marketing for so long, even when I knew that maybe this is not for me. Like I said earlier, I moved companies to kind of see if it was a company issue or an industry issue. So that was a span of 1.5 years, right? Yeah. And then even when I got into my next job, I was still back and forth deciding, talking to myself. That was another 1.5 years before I actually made the move. So it was a long process. But I think the lesson for me is that the longer you spend in a situation where you're unhappy, the longer you are delaying your happiness, you know. Mm-hmm. So for me, I had to decide that, you know what, I know where I want to be. What do I need to do, right? Instead of saying, I'm here, what can I do in terms of just the situation? I was like, what do I need to do to get to where I want to be? And I started using that end goal to fuel myself to take action and ultimately make that decision.
Yeah. And I guess, like, you know, you kind of alluded to it earlier when you were talking about some of the skills, like the marketing skills or the selling skills that are required in, like, you know, being on the trading floor. So I guess, like, do you see those years that you spent in marketing as a waste, or, you know, because they were transferable skills, perhaps it wasn't? Like, how do you feel about those early years in your career now looking back?
I think they weren't entirely of a waste, but I didn't leverage off a lot, to be quite honest, because it is completely different. Like I said, I actually ended up not even being on the trading floor, right, where I thought I could use my marketing skills. Yeah. But what it did help me is that I got into the graduate program now in the investment banking side with a bit more maturity. I knew how to carry myself. I knew how to market myself, because a lot of the opportunities that are given to you in a work sense is actually based on how people perceive you, right? Mm-hmm. It's not always about the work that you deliver. So I already had kind of like gone past the experience and the work, you know, like knowing that you started working, you now earn your own money, you've got your own place. I've gone past that, right? So I could focus on what do I need to do to be an employee or grad at that point that would stand out. I think that's one thing that benefited me, just coming in with a higher level of maturity, because now I was going into a graduate program with people who just graduated, they're fresh out of university.
You may be someone who's unhappy with where they are in their career and thinking of transitioning into a different job function and industry. As someone who's done exactly that, I'll say that the anxiety that you're feeling is completely normal. But as the saying goes, feel the fear and do it anyway. It's important to be mindful that there is no path forward that is devoid of risk and uncertainty. But don't be paralyzed by fear. Take that first step in the direction of your new career vision and have faith in your ability to figure it out. Coming up, Zianda shares about her transition into finance and investment banking, a field and industry that she absolutely loves.
Sure. So I work in a department called the capital markets that falls under investment banking. And I guess we know what debt is, right? So I'm going to use that as a basis to explain how we fit into the bank. So as a normal person, if you needed money, maybe to build a house or grow your business, you'd go to a bank and ask for a loan. The bank gives you the loan, you pay interest on that loan, and ultimately, when the loan comes to its end, you have to pay back what the bank initially gave you. So the debt capital markets is similar, but we work on a larger scale. We help governments and corporates raise money for different purposes. So we are kind of the middleman, and we do that through the issuance of bonds. So like I said, bonds are very similar to loans, but the difference now is that you are not going to a single bank. You are going to the markets. You're going to a pool of investors. Because like I said, these institutions or these governments need a large sum of money, and there's no bank that's just going to give you $1 billion, for instance. So how we come in now is that we link the clients, let's say the government of Ethiopia or something, and we link them to investors. We help them market themselves to investors, and investors then pull in, and the capital is raised through that pool. The money goes back to our clients. So how that is done as well is there are a lot of parties that are involved in the process, you know. And one I think I need to point out is probably the credit rating agencies. So most of the time, investors need to make a decision on whether the risk of them investing in this bond is worth it or not, right? So they will pull up different credit rating reports. They will do their own analysis. But credit rating reports are a big part of it because they show the risk. They show the probability of defaults. And the more likely that a government or a corporate or a financial institution is to default on paying back that money, the higher the interest will be, right? Because you have to keep in mind that it's risk and return. The higher the risk, the more that you need to get, you know, as a return. So for me borrowing you that money, I need to get a higher return for taking that risk on you. So my day-to-day job also just varies vastly. It's based on whether we have a live deal. So there is a client who's come to us and said they need funding, or if we are just pitching ourselves as a bank to say why you should pick us should you ever come to a point where you need financing versus another institution.
I imagine to some degree, like there are some like marketing skills that come into play when you're representing a client and positioning them as, you know, an institution that's like is worthy of investment. Is that like accurate? I mean, you can say no if not, but I'm just wondering if any of your marketing skills do come into play when you're representing your clients.
It's 100% accurate. We actually, when we do our timelines, we have a section just for marketing, right? And that can take place in different formats. And one of the formats is doing a deal roadshow. So we will take the clients and sell them to the investors. But before that, we actually compile a presentation, you know, saying, okay, this is the client strategy. This is how their financials are looking like. This is where they are heading. And this is why you should invest in them. So that is just pure marketing.
And then, like, I mean, of course, there's some transferable skills, but I can definitely imagine, like, there were so many more that you needed to develop. So what are some of the, I guess the skill or the knowledge gaps that you had to fill, and like how did you go about doing that when you joined the graduate program?
I think for me, it was just understanding the banking world as a whole, because it's a highly regulated industry, right? So you need to understand all the institutions, all the legalities, the regulations that come into play, right? This is just outside of you understanding the finance part of it. And the finance part of it in our side is just looking at the debt, right? Like I said, you have to understand what is the client's probability of defaulting, not being able to meet those obligations of paying back the investors. So you have to do analysis on that. And then our role also entails a lot of understanding of just the greater economy. So how are interest rates looking? Where are they heading? What does that mean? How does that impact how you price a certain instrument? So there's a lot of that as well. But even then, you know, there's a lot that you can learn while you're in your university years, but the real learning is actually being in there and understanding what goes on. And I guess in countries like South Africa, it's still very one-track minded in terms of who is hired into banking. It's usually your CAs or your chartered accountants, your finance majors or people who did their masters in finance. Whereas I found that in Europe and in the US, they are a bit more open-minded. You know, you can get an art student who goes into banking, for instance, because at the end of the day, the real learning happens on the job, and it's about your attitude towards absorbing all of that and learning those skills as you go.
Yeah, that's so true. That observation you made about like, I always used to find it so strange that, you know, you could have studied like something like philosophy in university and then go on to banking. Like, because like, you know, I come from the same context that you came from, where I know a lot of people who study finance and accounting, and often it's the case that unless you study those in university, you can't really get into like banking and accounting roles. Do you feel like based off of that, like from what you've observed, like on both sides of the pond, like how valuable is it to do a bachelor's in either finance or accounting?
I think you have to decide on where you want to take your career, right? If you want, let's say you're in a South African context, you have to go with how companies hire. And in that instance, studying your finance degrees will help you a lot. I've also noticed that the US is also a bit stricter on having your finance degrees on your resume. But in the UK, for instance, in my team, when I was at HSBC and I spent time in London while I was there, we had a guy who did languages, and he did French up to master's level, for instance. And we had our leader at that point was a lawyer. So he was actually admitted. He was admitted, I think they call them barristers and not attorneys. And he went full on banking. So I think maybe Europe and the UK are a bit more flexible. But what's more important, I would say, is studying further to make yourself a bit more marketable, you know, because it is a very competitive market. So yeah. Going in with just undergrad is going to be very difficult, because now you have a lot of graduates who are even coming in with a master's degree.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on that note, I mean, you decided, like after pivoting into finance, you decided to do a master's degree in development finance. And, you know, like, first of all, you know, yay, big advocate of investing in further education. But what were some of the reasons that you decided to make this investment, particularly while working in such a hectic industry? Because you did it part-time, right?
Yeah.
So was it just, I mean, you're in the UK at that point, right? So, I mean, in that context, from what you said, people didn't necessarily need to, but was it just because you wanted to stay competitive irrespective of what market you were working in? What were some of the reasons?
Definitely to stay competitive, internationally especially. And secondly, I think I've always just wanted to study further. It was a matter of what. I initially did do a CIMA qualification, which is Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. I finished my first level. And then when I went to my second level, I was like, nope, this is not something I want to take forward. And I then kind of try to view what else I can do. And I've got a big passion of just developing the African continent. I enjoy finance. And I guess that narrowed it down to doing my master's in development finance.
Mm. Well, I mean, I'm thinking now about my conversation with Marcel, who you know, like she was talking about how like when you study, I guess almost out of choice as opposed to like just out of compulsion or like because you're expected to do a bachelor's, it brings a different level of satisfaction. Did you find that as well when you were doing your master's?
So much. And I think overall that made it easier for me to just study it as well, especially when it comes to the dissertation part, because once you finish your coursework, you have to do a thesis. And when we actually got to that point, our lecturer at that point, I think it was in our second year or probably mid first year, said you need to do a topic that you're going to be passionate about, because when you're doing your master's, your thesis is actually the hardest part because it's a long process and no one is actually nagging you to finish. There's no strict deadline. That's why you'll find people will ace their coursework and then it will take them 3-4 years to actually finish their dissertation, which goes back to what Marcel was saying. You really have to enjoy it to see it through.
Mm. So what advice then would you give to anyone who's thinking of studying or maybe even currently studying while working? You know, like how did you manage to balance that with such a hectic job?
One, you have to remember that your employer is still paying you, so you cannot drop the ball on the job side, right? And secondly, you have to do a little each day. There was no day that I did not touch my school books, whether it's just reading up on a topic or actually doing exercises. I always did something and I did double the work on weekends. And just to break the monotony, what I did was watch a lot of YouTube. I call it the University of YouTube because you can find literally anything there, right? So I would either look up certain topics or just find experts explaining a certain concept. And then that made it a bit more fun for me. But one thing that also helped is just to get people who are going to keep you accountable. So for me, one was my then partner, now husband. He was just always on my back. He knew my deadlines, so he always knew that if I had to do this, it has to be done by a certain point. And secondly, I had a study group from students in my class, and we met every Saturday. And we always divvied up the work based on your certain skills or your experience, and then you would come back and teach back. We did that with assignments, we did that with exam preps, so that helped a lot. So I guess just summing that up, I would say do a little every single day. Do not neglect either your schoolwork or your actual employer's work. And secondly, get people who are going to hold you accountable.
A lot of the challenges that Zianda had to overcome when she successfully transitioned into investment banking were personal insecurities and mental barriers formed by systemic racism. In the final segment of this episode, Zianda will expound on what these were and offer advice to anyone who's thinking of making a career change.
Yeah, I think outside of the technical challenges, because there weren't a lot of transferable skills, most of my challenges were actually mental, right? Mm-hmm. I was so fixated on being an old graduate because I was on the grad program. I was 26 at the time. I was on the program with 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds. So I just felt like a granny in the crew, you know? Mm. And even though I don't think anybody really cared, that was just an obsession for me, you know? And it took up a lot of my headspace mentally, even though I did still try to show up. That's something that impacted me, right? And then the second part of it, which is something that you've discussed quite regularly on your podcast, is imposter syndrome. Mm. So about halfway, 9 months into the year of the first year of the grad program, I was offered an opportunity to go work in London at the head office. So I get to London and it's just a different ball game. There are more analysts because I went as an analyst, and you know, we always have the stereotype about Asians being smart. So there were a lot of Asian
analysts as well, that I was comparing myself, you know, thinking, how did I make it here? You know, I was just a random girl from Africa who got lucky. You know, those were the stories that were going on in my head. And it took a while for me to just accept that this is an opportunity that you need to take advantage of. And quite opportune at the time was actually the fact that a friend of mine presented me with a book, Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, which helped quite a lot in that period, just in terms of gaining my confidence and not focusing on the mental challenges and just presenting myself at work at the best level that I could.
Wow. I mean, that's quite a lot that you had to contend with. I mean, and in as much as, you know, you're right, like other people like wouldn't really care about that kind of thing, or some people might, like, you know, like when I heard your story, for instance, I was actually just inspired that you were brave enough to do that, because I feel like if, you know, like when it comes to people just having the courage to do what they feel is right, I'm always just kind of inspired by those ideas. But when you're in the situation yourself, it can be a whole other story, like the narrative that you have in your mind versus what other people, the way that they perceive it.
I'll be honest that I am kind of a people pleaser, and that has been something that's been with me all my life, you know, just in terms of what I said earlier, the decision to go study medicine, for instance, that wasn't necessarily something I wanted to do for myself, right? Over time, I think the experience of changing careers and making all these decisions have taught me to decide and do what is best for me, right? Because no matter how you live your life, people will always have an opinion on it. So at the end of the day, you need to do something that's going to make you happy. And one of my favorite quotes actually is, you know, you can be the biggest, juiciest peach in the world, and there's still going to be somebody out there that does not like peaches, you know. So it's just not worth it doing something when you know that you cannot please everybody.
Yeah, that's so true. And it, like, definitely something I can kind of relate to, because it's something that I'm definitely overcoming myself. I love that quote that you shared, and something that I'm always going to bear in mind, because it's so true. Like, some people just don't, you're not everybody's cup of tea, or your choices are not always going to make people happy, and that's fine. And you just live for yourself. And that's something that comes with age, right? Well, not necessarily age, but is this something that a lot of people grow into?
Yeah, definitely. It's a mind switch.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so, like, looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently, like in terms of your career change?
Yeah, I mean, I think the right answer to that would be I wouldn't have done anything differently, because everything happens for a reason. But the honest answer is I definitely would have liked to make the switch a bit earlier. You know, like I said, the more you delay making the decision to get you to a certain point of happiness, the longer you delay being happy. So I would have preferred if I had done it maybe a year or two earlier. But just having experienced everything that I have up to this point, I think there was also a lot of value of me making the switch when I did.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm glad that you enjoyed, you know, you love you working in banking. Can you imagine if you had switched over and you hated it as much as you had hated marketing?
It would have been a disaster.
You would have been like, I give up. Like, what is this? What is this life? But I mean, at the same time, I think people should remain open, because I think, like, getting to know yourself and becoming self-aware is a journey, you know? And even like with myself, you know, first of all, when I was in university, and people would be studying finance and accounting, I literally remember thinking to myself, it's a good thing, you know, people are so different, because I don't know how these people can like this, how they can enjoy this subject matter. And obviously, I loved marketing, and you're the complete opposite. But even like over time, I've got to understand myself more. And, you know, marketing is very broad, or there's certain facets of marketing that can still be applied to other career fields. You know what I mean? So I think it's just so important to stay open and, you know, not put yourself in a box too much.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then what are your future plans? And like, what are you hoping, you know, your where do you hope your career will go?
Look, I am still very happy in banking. I think I still have a couple of years in me in the industry. One area that I'm quite interested in at the moment is sustainable finance, because I think that's just where the world is heading now. Everything we do, we have to kind of understand the impacts on environments, on the social conditions, on governance. And I guess that was also driven by my qualification in development finance that kind of piqued that interest. So that's definitely a route in finance that I want to head down, which is sustainable finance. It's not too far out from what I'm doing, but then you just have that ESG overlay in terms of the transactions that you do.
Okay, now listen, you're going to have to take it back a bit for us now. What is ESG? and also, could you define sustainable finance? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, maybe you're investing in like renewable energy assets.
Exactly.
But it could, okay. That, so that's what it is.
Yeah, it's definitely that, yeah.
And ESG stands for?
Environmental, social, and governance.
Okay.
So you kind of have to think of those factors when you are financing either a project or a client has to decide that they're going to use the proceeds that they raise from our financing into something that's going to be good for the environment, for instance, like you said, renewable energy, the ocean, gender equality, the list goes on and on.
Okay, well, that sounds super dope. It's just so funny how we like throw around these terms. It's like when you said that, I was like thinking, oh, yeah.
Perfect.
This is a triple bottom line. Got it. Okay, cool. That sounds like a really great, you know, future. And you're so right. It is moving in that direction. And obviously, that is probably the best thing to do once you become more established in a certain field, is to start niching down a bit. Make yourself more like an expert, I suppose, in a certain field. So for you, it'll be ESG.
Yeah.
So what advice, you know, this will be my last question. What advice do you have for people who, you know, are thinking about making the change? Perhaps they've been in an industry and they feel like they've, you know, kind of plateaued, or it's just not what they expected, or, you know, they just see something else that they think they might be interested in, but they kind of scared to make the leap, or they're not sure how to do it.
You know, as someone who's just spoken about having done or having wished to have made the switch earlier, I would probably say it's never too late. You know, I was speaking to one of my ex-colleagues from when I was in marketing, who's actually a marketing director now in a very big firm in South Africa, who's actually looking to switch into banking. You know,
she
has a very good resume. She's well known in the market, but she just feels like she wants to do something different. And I was just talking her through the options, just because she's coming from such a senior level. I can't say just join a grad program, you know, but the options that she can look into with her experience, for example, she can go into banking and be a relationship manager for FMCG companies, so help them raise funds because she has knowledge of that industry. So I would say if you do have a completely different career path that you want to look into, talk to people. You know, there's always a way. And you may think you're the only person going through that, but when you start having the conversation, you realize that, hey, there are like 10 other people who are either going through it or who have done it and can guide you through that whole experience.
Yeah. That's so true. People are never as alone as they think they are in such a situation. It's never a unique situation. Well, thank you so much, Zianda, for taking some time out of your evening. I can hear the traffic in New York. It sounds so exciting. I'm so happy for you that you moved there. Gosh, I'm so jealous. That's Zianda Kumalo on navigating a career change. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share it with your friends and rate Career Queens Podcast on Apple Podcasts. Until next time.